Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episodes. The news stands for news, and the cues stands for questions.
And we have answers for your questions, both in the Star Wars universe and maybe the podcast itself. We'll explain in a second here. Hey, this podcast is brought to you. That sounded aggressive. Hey, we just want to remind you all, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, as well, we'll give you our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. But Joseph, that is not all.
It is not. We also have another offer. I like this tradition, so I'm going to say, hey, listen, here's what we have to tell you about. Inside Editions is a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books. They're offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending a new book. Ken and I were both lucky enough to receive a copy. It is beautiful and strange and tiny. It is the mini book of lightsabers. It's got some of the kind of similar art of the lightsaber collection book that we recommended so much because we enjoyed. But it's this little tiny flip book of lightsabers. It's beautiful, right?
I'm holding it right now. That is the sound of this book. It is in a world of wonderful, large 30-pound Star Wars books, which I love and will still continue to buy. More on those later. This little book, the mini book of lightsabers, is great. It's like I said, it's a continuation of the book that came out before, but there's some new material, High Republic Jedi, all the way through it there. It's just fun. It's just fun that Star Wars can be enjoyed in big and small ways.
Literally. Yeah, it's just like it's alphabetical too, which is great because you can be like flip through and go, like, okay, cool. Who's a lightsaber do I want to look at? And yeah, having received the Star Wars prequel era, Taschen book that's so huge. It looks like these two books are doing a Pixar movie together. It's a little tiny Star Wars book and a huge Star Wars book. Go on an adventure.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, yes. If you want tiny lightsaber books, you can use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Great stuff. Indeed. We always like to catch up with Star Wars and life adventures. And I got to tell you, had a boring week, Joseph, just a lot of work, eating right, working out more, sore because of it all. Star Wars, one of those weeks where Star Wars, I started Midnight Horizon for our deep dive discussion. I didn't watch any Star Wars content, and that's okay. And I think that's part of the Star Wars life adventure for me, for all of you listening there. Sometimes we as fans, what am I doing to love Star Wars today? Maybe today's the day you like pizza more. I don't know. Star Wars is always going to be there. It was a good week to just kind of not take a break and take the foot off the gas, Joseph, but just kind of be like, I am a Star Wars fan always and forever. I don't need to prove it today.
Yeah. What a terrifying choice, though, to imagine getting up in the morning and today you must pick between Star Wars and pizza.
Right?
I totally know what you mean, though, because that was kind of a little bit of one of my big life adventures is making room for some other stuff I love, as well as Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I did. I'm a giant Beatles fan. And I remember there's at one point in my life, I realized I had forgot all the answers to the trivia questions I used to know. And I felt as though I let my 14-year-old self down. And that's just not the right energy. I'm a Beatles fan then, now, and forever. And I will be so with Star Wars.
Exactly. And I'm sure there's some point in your life where you've been eating pizza, listening to the Beatles, and looking at a Star Wars book all at the same time.
If I haven't, there will now.
Excellent. So that was really it. No other Star Wars or life adventures you wanted to share?
No, I started, really wanted to make notes in this section on the notes, because usually I just go a little more off the cuff in this section. But I was like, no, I want to make sure I don't forget things. So I sat down this morning, a cup of coffee. I was like, what did I do in Star Wars? I didn't do anything. That's crazy.
That is crazy, but good. Yeah, it's absolutely good, which is funny because the main thing that I have two things I want to share, but one of the big ones is I went to this Doctor Who convention in Los Angeles, Gallifrey One. Mm-hmm. I went there just on Friday. It's a whole weekend convention, but I had some other life stuff going on this weekend, so I couldn't be there all weekend. And I've been to it, for many years now, sometimes performing on the main stage, sometimes just doing a few comedy panels, but also just being there as a fan of Doctor Who. And we get that question a ton on Force Center and sometimes in real life of like, do you ever get sick of Star Wars? Is there a limit right. to your love of Star Wars? And I always think about it as my only limit on my love of Star Wars is I want to make sure that there's room to love other things as well.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to go to this Doctor Who convention. And there's other things represented there as well, including Star Wars, but just really like immerse myself in a different fandom for a week or a weekend, so that was really great. I felt very safe there because everything was vaccinated and masked. Got to do a couple of really fun comedy panels where it's just like, who's the scariest monster in Doctor Who? And one that's just like, let's riff. And like, it's like a game show, just make jokes about Doctor Who. Right. Wow. So they're total comedy panels. And I realized like, this is the first time that I have come close to performing live in 2 years, which was huge. Like that first time I got a laugh, I was like, oh yeah, I haven't heard that in real life to hear like, 50, 60, 100 people. I don't know how many people are in the panel room laughing. Right.
Yeah.
And then the fun of like other people are making jokes, great jokes on the panel too. And I'm getting to laugh and enjoy it and be in that bubble of just laughing and enjoying and having fun in person.
Yeah.
No muting. There's no way the internet can go out on that. It was so beautiful and so healing.
Yeah. Was there any part of you where like, drug, it's returned?
No, I've been thinking about this a lot because I want to get back to performing. It's so hard to balance everything, but every time that I've been about to start, you know, kind of pulling the trigger. And I know you had a window there where you were performing a ton with Mark Ellis. I thought it was great. And I was really happy for you. And I kept thinking about, like, well, when do I want to get back to it? And every time I've been about to, honestly, there's been another wave, right?
Yeah.
In particular with this most recent wave, the place that I would have wanted to perform, I know that there'd be no way that they're doing performances yet, kind of thing. So, you know, it's been a real choice for me to not be performing live, and it was just great to have it back, and hope to have it back again in a more regular way at some point in my life.
Soon enough. And sub note, we currently have no tour shows planned because of recent surges. So, yeah.
Yeah. But even totally immersed in Doctor Who, there's overlap. It's such an incredibly friendly convention, very much like the vibe of Star Wars Celebration, but for Doctor Who. So, like, there was one Mandalorian who was just a straight-up Mandalorian wandering around. There was one Mandalorian who had made special Mandalorian armor that made them look like a Gallifreyan Time Lord security agent mixed with a Mandalorian. This is great. Star Wars follows me everywhere. So that was just a ton of fun. And then on Sunday, the other thing I wanted to talk about, I kind of opened the Razor Crest.
Oh, that's right. You got the crest.
It's so big. We talked about it last week. It's so big, and I wanted to find a special time to open it. So I had a nice conversation with my wife, and I was like, I need some quality Razor Crest time. And I did put on some music and pour a little whiskey and get some physical exercise trying to first pull the actual Razor Crest box out of the shipping box and then trying to pull the styrofoam actual Razor Crest out of the Razor Crest box. I physically went through a lot. It was, it felt less like opening a toy and more like some kind of like, am I birthing the Razor Crest? It was weird. It was like a lot of work. And then I looked at all the components, really celebrated the action figures. They're great that come with it. They're all, you know, totally unique in their packaging and their design. It's all great. But then the actual Razor Crest, putting it together, is like, I was describing it to you off the air. For me, it's like, the instruction booklet is like IKEA, but not quite as clear.
Yeah,
right. And that's just for me because I don't put together Lego. I don't put together model kits. It's a skill set I don't spend a lot of time on. So I'm sure for some people it's like, yeah, it's no problem whatsoever. But for me, it was like, okay, that's as far as I can go. I'm going to put this aside now and I'm going to finish constructing the Razor Crest next week.
It's dangerous, man. That's where my temper starts to expose itself a little bit. Coming to the light is that building things. Not my thing. So God bless you.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird baggage I have too of like, yeah, okay, I got to snap these pieces together, but I love these toys so much and I'm mindful that I want them to exist forever. And like, I feel like putting on gloves and like, I want to work in a museum when I touch a toy, you know, I know they're meant to be built. I know they're meant to be played with, but for myself, that's a little bit of a thing that I go through too.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love what you're saying about that. And the Razor Crest, the whole process from you supporting the crowdfund campaign to getting it now, and even then having to build it once you get it, is a test in patience. It's a test in Star Wars patience.
It really is. But it's beautiful, and the box itself is great. So I'm extremely happy I got it, and I can't wait to finish putting it all together.
Can't wait for some good cocktail photos next to the Razor Crest. Notes is coming.
Oh, it will be happening. Yes. Yeah, yes. I already posed my my Din action figure that my soft goods cape Din Djarin action figure will be appearing with some whiskey, I'm sure.
Love that. Well, that's a great Star Wars adventure in your house and at a convention. And even though mine was a little boring, I think you made up for it with two big adventure spots.
We can share our life adventures.
Yeah, indeed. Before we get to the news, we do want to talk a little bit about the podcast and some exciting news and some updates as we head into March of 2022, which is insane to say. Joseph, we kind of discussed this plan, but are also going off a little off the cuff here. Let's just say this. Last week, we were blessed by the presence of the wonderful Jennifer Landa. For newer listeners of the show, Jennifer is one of the co-founders of the podcast and was a regular presence around here until life kind of took her away. And by life, I mean actual life. Her second child being born, change in location, living locations just made it more difficult to get to our in-person recording sessions. But now that we're digital and virtual right now, it was the right time. And we are proud to announce that beginning in March, Jennifer Landa will be joining us when she can. There's still going to be some days where maybe it might not work for a all Star Wars news episode. Joseph, that's exciting.
Yeah, we are so excited that the stars have finally aligned. I guess the Star Wars have finally aligned that it works for Jennifer to come back on a regular basis. And in order to kind of make that happen and make it work for everybody, and to be honest, to make sure that we have enough time to talk about everything we want to, yeah. With Jennifer, we're going to be recording all three of us a news and life Star Wars Adventures update. So it'll be much like the show you're listening to, the News and Q show, where all three of us will talk about our Star Wars and life adventures, and then we'll dive into the most recent news, or sometimes the news from a week ago because we missed it. But that will be the show. And we only have so much recording time with Jennifer, and we don't want to rush through any of it. We don't want to rush through the life adventures, the news, and we certainly don't want to rush through listener questions. So what we're going to do is we're going to break out the questions segment of News and Cues and make it its own show. And Ken and I will still be taking your questions. And sometimes it's the questions, Ken, where we really spiral into, we thought this was a short answer. And then there's something about the philosophy of Star Wars, or people ask such great questions about how Star Wars impacts our real lives, that we spiral off into these great conversations, and we want to make sure that we have a room to spiral a little bit. So news in Life Adventures is going to be one show with all three of us, and then the Cues is going to be its own show with Ken and I.
Yeah, I do think podcasting is the art of trying to control your rambling as best you can. It is a certain art of broadcasting, but that's going to be that. So, yeah, news on Tuesdays, answers on Wednesdays, Thursdays, the deep dives that we love doing, love presenting to all of you, whether it be a scene-by-scene, going to a specific, maybe a hot-button debate that week and diving into it the way we do, or just looking back or looking forward. All those things that you know and come to love from the deep dive will remain on Thursdays. And then for the time being in March, the return of the Clone Wars Report, as we start looking at season 5, we're going to work our way all the way up to going through season 7 again, even though that's how the Clone Wars report started with that season. We're going to go through it again and see what time and more information has done to our experience with that show. So we're even going to review that 4-issue Clone Wars comic book arc with the son of Dathomir.
Yeah.
As well. And then we're going to keep with Star Wars Ranked, maybe occasionally Spotlight Star Wars or some other kind of programming on Sundays for it now. Is that a lot of content? Well, yes, it is. But we are so thankful you're always here for the journey. But some of the shows will be a little shorter. Maybe you can digest on your way to work, over your lunch break, and some when you could want to get to them, the deeper dives, those will still be the full length. That's a full slate, Joseph.
It is a full slate, but I'm really, really excited about it. I'm so excited about Jennifer's return. I'm so excited about the different perspectives that she brings. And I love doing this podcast in any combination of us various hosts. But there's a special just kind of fun when it's all three of us. And I'm really looking forward to that, having that fun approach to the news.
Yeah. And a lot of you have been, hey, when's she going to come back? Can she come back? Some of you know maybe more the story of, hey, it was kind of hard for her to come back. It just was the right time. And again, no pressure. Some weeks she might not be able to be here. That's why it's set up that way. But we're so excited to welcome Jennifer Linda back. And we should say, we've been putting more content on YouTube because of we switched to Acast. They have the ability for you to kind of automatically load some of the shows. Some aren't working and I have to manually load. That's a different conversation for an IT call down the line. But because our YouTube channel has been a little bit more active, we have decided, maybe it's time to roll some cameras on some special shows. What that means is, no, I'm not firing up a camera right now. The first one is going to be on Friday, March 11th, 4 p.m. Pacific. This is tentative, big pencil markings here. But March 11th, Friday, we're going to do a live hour Q&A type show here on our YouTube channel. So subscribe if you haven't already. That way you can interact with us in real time, live, if you're watching live or a little bit later. It's going to be fun. We're going to be looking to do those once a month or so we can kind of interact with all of you on that side there. So there you go. Some big updates,
Yeah. Jennifer Landa's coming back. We're going to have plenty of room for all of the listener questions, and we're going to put our faces on YouTube every once in a while.
Every once in a while. Yeah. I mean, I do it other spots and you do it other spots. We just always say, I hate to sound like we're stubborn over it, but like Force Center is an audio experience and we approach it and it's just, I cameras changed the game a little bit, but this is not going to be us going deep into, you know, the heart of Pong Krell and what's wrong with it. This is going to be fun hangout. Maybe some friends will pop on from time to time. We don't know, but chance to just kind of talk to you all in a different medium. So there you go. But the big news, Jennifer Landa back on Monday news show starting March, Tuesday, March 1st. We record on Mondays, released on Tuesday. I'll get it right one of these days.
Well, that's it, Ken. Great episode.
Great episode. Great episode. All right, let's get into some Star Wars news. And yes, we are catching up on some of these stories that broke over the last week. So apologize if we miss all of the stories. We'll get to some things down the line if we need to. But this big headline, Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's right. The show is on the way, and Obi-Wan is going to get his own theme by John Williams himself. Variety confirmed what was in the rumor winds that 45 years after the world first heard John Williams' Star Wars score, the maestro is returning to record this theme for Obi-Wan Kenobi. Williams has composed and recorded an Obi-Wan Kenobi theme for the upcoming show. A composer has not been named for the series, or at least we don't know the name at this point in time. Joseph, without a doubt, this is exciting news indeed. What are our thoughts, and what thoughts come to mind when you think of John Williams scoring an Obi-Wan Kenobi theme for a show in 2022?
To quote Palpatine, but make it more positive, a surprise to be sure, but a great one. Paraphrasing Palpatine. That's a new podcast we're also adding. Paraphrasing Palpatine. I am joking. We are not doing that. Yeah. Anyway, this is thrilling news. This is great news. And I missed the rumors, which is sometimes nice to miss the rumors, because this was brand new to me. And there's so many things I love about it, Ken. I think there's the very full circle nature to it, right? Since what became known as the Force theme or Binary Sunset was originally intended to be Obi-Wan's theme. That's a thing that people talk about a lot. So this idea that, you know, this has been a fun anecdote for John Williams to talk about. It's like, yeah, I kind of meant that as Obi-Wan's theme, but then it became this much larger and totally different thing for him to be like, you know, what's been bothering me for decades? What is Obi-Wan's theme specifically then? Right. So I love that full circle nature. And I haven't seen any statements from Williams himself, but it's really interesting to see what compels him to return, right?
Yeah.
He talked a lot publicly about how his connection to the sequel trilogy and wanting to do them all was Rey.
Yeah.
That he was really moved by Daisy Ridley's performance and really wanted to help continue and finish telling the story of Rey through music and his contribution. Then it's kind of amazing that he came back for Solo, right? For a character that he knew well, and it worked so well for me in that score, which I love that he wrote the theme, which is then, of course, pops up throughout. But then John Powell did such an amazing job. So to have him come back for Obi-Wan feels like I'm sure that he is invested in that character and that idea. And how does Obi-Wan exist in the realm of music in John Williams' mind? Must be something that engages him, or he wouldn't be coming back.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. 90 years young, still working, still going on tour, still wanting to come back. And it just seems right. And, you know, I love the music of Boba Fett, love the music of Mando, love that kind of that musical universe that's being built. But Kenobi, man, I mean, you're right. The Force theme was kind of his theme. Who hasn't hummed that tune every now and then? So it just feels right. And I feel just blessed as a fan. And again, in 2022, a show with Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi is coming, and John Williams is not only around for it, he is actively rolled up his sleeves, got involved, and made a theme for one of these legacy characters. There ain't nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And I also feel like there's inevitably going to be conversation around Obi-Wan Kenobi, the television show that we've talked about, where there's certainly going to be viewers, fans, who say, oh, we're tired of the repeat characters. It's too much nostalgia. And it's a fine debate, and it's going to be a talking point, and there's nothing that can be done about that. But I think for me, this news is a reminder that this is different from The Mandalorian or Book of Boba Fett, which was kind of trying to stake out this new era in time of the, you know, shortly after the New Republic and what's happening to the bounty hunters and the criminal world and what's the music for this more Western, in samurai focused story, right? The fact that Williams is coming back for Kenobi to me reminds me that this is a different show. This is tied to the main Skywalker saga. It's not trying to be the bold new Star Wars like you've never seen it before. It's like a subset of the Skywalker saga. And to me, it's appropriate that John Williams is coming back for that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And there's, you know, brace for impact. The hot takes are coming when that show pops up. And as they should, you know, I want people to have an opinion on Kenobi the show and Kenobi the character. So I guess, yeah, if Star Wars has a nostalgia problem, if John Williams is part of that, then I'm here for the problem, right? It's going to be good. And I'm excited because, you know, is it going to be a variation on the binary sunset? Is he like, well, let me take from that and build from that? Is it something brand new? I love how it worked with Solo. I think John Powell's score is vastly underrated. Use the right term, Ken. But the Han's theme just kind of worked seamlessly with that there. So I absolutely am excited for this. Just excited and excited for this. Couldn't be more excited for the series now, or at least I think I can't be more excited. And they do something like this, and I just get the Star Wars nerd chills.
Yeah, I mean, just from this straightforward nerd perspective, being like many people, a big fan of Obi-Wan Kenobi for the vast, you know, majority of my life, to have him have his very own theme. And it's so fun to wonder what it's going to be, you know, pensive, wise, determined, you know, exciting, but muted at the same time. Ah, I can't wait to hear it.
Can't wait to hear it. Indeed. We're so close. We're so close. The series, of course, debuts May 25th. 45 years after, right? I can't wait to little tidbits peek around the corner with the trailer and whatnot. So marketing. I'm excited for marketing.
Me too.
Hey, staying in the musical side of things, the Andor series grabs an Oscar-nominated composer, reads the headline. Filmmusicreporter.com. Is saying that Nicholas Britell has joined the Andor strike team, if you will. I said that, not them. Bad play of words by me, not them. Britell is a multiple-timed Oscar nominee, most known for If Beale Street Could Talk, Moonlight, and I would say currently HBO's Succession is his theme there, turned a lot of heads. A lot of people love that show. So general thoughts here, Joseph. What do we think Britell can bring to Andor? This is a post-John Williams world in a lot of ways. We kind of, that impact with Ludwig coming up from Mando, we already kind of, dealt, got past and enjoyed that. So what's your thoughts here?
Ah, this is thrilling news. I think this, for me, particularly combined with the announcement of John Williams writing an Obi-Wan Kenobi theme, is this reminder that we're getting towards this buffet of different kinds of Star Wars certainly on Disney Plus and eventually on screen, I'm sure as well, because this feels totally appropriate to me that like Obi-Wan Kenobi is a legacy character. Vader's going to be in it. This is, you know, the Kenobi show in some ways is going to be the Star Wars that we know, right? But then I think Andor is going to be something different because from everything we know from the descriptions, what we know of Andor's job at this point in time, what we know from the resume of the writers, I really think this is going to be space espionage. This is going to be gritty, you know? And to look at this composer who has such a variety in his resume, like there's definitely some stuff in here that's probably a little bit more traditionally orchestral, like Cruella. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure that's a little bit more orchestral. But like things like The Big Short and Succession are very modern and very, sparse and tense and emotional. And it makes me think like this is going to be an entirely different style of music that really is there to accentuate. Yep, it's still Star Wars, but there's a different mood because it's a different show. It's a different dish that you can scoop out of the Star Wars buffet.
Yeah, we love that buffet. I need some tacos right now. Anyways, looking at his credits, trying to pull, you know, that the article list of here's the things he's known for. He all over the place in the best ways possible with what he worked on. And hear me out here. When my first thought, yes, he's got this big HBO theme that everyone's vibing on right now. A lot of people, again, love the show.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So, but if Beale Street Could Talk, Moonlight, I and Oscars, right. I think of big movies and that I so love the Mando and Boba Fett scores. I'm a fan of Ludwig Göransson just in and out of Star Wars too. I've talked before about some of his other music he's produced that I love. I just, when I see this, I think Andor is going to have a different feel. At least maybe I'm super hopeful that it's not, it's, you know, nothing against the Boba Fett or Mando stuff, but like filmed on location, filmed over in England, a different vibe, different feel, and kind of getting a weekly movie feel, which I still think Mando, Boba Fett have their own feel, but not a big giant movie feel to me. That's me. That's my take. And so when you get kind of a big score, you know, composer like this to come on and do that kind of stuff, I don't know. Just, it just makes me think that this show is going to be bigger in scope than I think people are giving it credit for.
Yeah. It makes me think, because of his resume, that there's absolutely the possibility of these moments where it is what we think of as Star Wars music, where it's, you know, swelling and operatic and, you know, huge, right? Where like everybody get out of the way because the music's coming, you know? But then also where there's moments where it could be much more tense and stylized and less wall-to-wall scoring and themes,
yeah, yeah,
and more just sparse. And, you know, a lot of these dramas that he's written for are just, they are rich with tension. And tension. I think that makes a ton of sense for something that's going to be dealing with espionage.
Yeah. I mean, it's from the get-go, all that's lined up, from the script of the show, the people involved in the show, and now the music of the show. Tension. I love that word. Star Wars needs some good tension there. Love that. So we'll update you on more Andor stuff as we race towards Andor. Even the article from Film Music Reporter kind of was saying ahead of kind of that, you know, third quarter kind of target area for release, right? Which I'm like, that's really close.
It really is.
Final news story here is a new book on the way. A new book. We talked about small books like this one in my hand now. A new book on the way that tracks the Star Wars story through the ages. I bet this is going to be a big book. Get ready to put Star Wars timelines on your coffee table if you have room with your Razor Crest Jabba's sail barge. Death Star Lego set. The authors of this book are Kristen Baver, Jason Fry, Cole Horton, Amy Richow, and former ABC reporter Clayton Sandals, making his Star Wars writing debut. Great guy out there. Always a great positive presence. Good to see him joining this team. This book, as it's described, is a guide. It's not just a research. It's a guide. It's going to take you through all the Star Wars stories from the High Republic to the fall of the Final Order. Covers movies, shows, books, games, and more. Which of course means the first thing, my first thought, Joseph, is we're going to need volume 2 at some point.
Yeah. Look at, I think it comes out in November, right? So it's like, how much of Kenobi is in there? How much of Andor? Or is like, yeah. What year will the second edition come out? Cause it's coming.
Which by the way, I love, cause I mean, Star Wars still goes on. So we no secret here. We love themes and emotional canon and discussing what's in the stories for us, but make no mistake, me, Joseph, and Jennifer, all of us and all of you listening, we also love canon. That's why we're here, too. We do love knowing all the things where they fit in. So what do we feel about getting an official timeline book, Joseph?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think for me, I really like it because I think it does lead into the emotional canon. I think laying things out in like sequential order, I think sometimes can help us as fans step back from looking at an individual movie and, you know, what parts do we like? What parts do we didn't? Did this make sense? Did that make sense? And just seeing it on a piece of paper and say, here's what happened to Anakin. Now, years later, here's what happened to Luke, what happened to Rey. And before that, here's what happened to this Jedi in the High Republic. And that those emotional canons start to pop, because that's really all you're looking at, right? Is how we poke fun as a community at George Lucas's. It's poetry. It's like poetry. It rhymes, but that is so much the power of Star Wars storytelling. It is a generational tale where different eras and ages deal with some of the same problems and try to find a way forward and try to learn from the past, but not repeat those mistakes. And I think all those great themes and this great term that you coined of emotional canon kind of pop off the page when it's just all lined up there.
It really does. There's something comforting about seeing it, seeing the connections. Even Kristen Baver, in announcing this and talking about this on StarWars.com, is like, you know, in researching her Skywalker Family at War book, a book reviewed here and enjoyed on Force Center, just to see all the stories. And when you lay it down, and there's, in this modern era with the comics and, like I said, even the games, like I forget even that tablet game I played on my iPad in 2014 is canon. So, to speak, you know, there's characters that pop up every now and then. And it's like, to maybe put it all in there. It is just fun, but you're also right. That's when the things we do talk about start to really emerge. And that's part of the fun, I think, as well. I've always described me watching things like Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, whatever, these big fandom stories, a living history document where I just like, oh, I find out what's next or find out what that blank, when we fill it in, like what that was. And I just kind of love that. But I think it even means more now, believe it or not. I think it means more now when you see the heart of it all and how it connects. So I think good point on that, Joseph.
Yeah. And I think some things that right now fans kind of have to pull together and, you know, is always huge. A tip of the hat to Alex and Molly Damon do such a great job at Star Wars Explained, kind of pulling some of these things together. But, you know, imagine if there is just like a little breakout box that's like, here are all the known Jedi who were alive during the Imperial era. Right. And just seeing that on the page, I think it opens up the story to people, to fans who maybe don't have the time to do a podcast or, you know, watch 1,000 YouTube videos, like, especially younger fans. I think it opens it up to younger fans where like, you don't have to do all of the work to cross compile across decades of movies, TV shows, books, video games. It can just be there on the page and it lets you engage with the story because you don't have to do as much work to pull it all together.
Yeah. Look, and shout out to Alex and Molly. Every year Alex does the updated canon timeline video, and I watch every second of it because where do the new things fall in? So it's not easy for Alex and Molly to put that together, but editing a YouTube video versus an entire second edition of the book, going to be an interesting thing that they do with Acolyte, Ahsoka, the Thrawn show. That's not coming. I'm just saying it. Anyways, but it's a fun challenge, and it's just part of the fun of being a Star Wars fan. All this stuff is what makes being a Star Wars fan to this degree so much fun and so rewarding. You can spend an afternoon just looking at the Star Wars timeline.
Love yeah. A couple other quick thoughts here, and I'm very curious about yours. The image on the cover is really engaging to me because there are many images from, you know, the famous films, but there are a ton of more modern images, right? There's a lot of images from the sequels. There's from Solo, from Rogue One, from the Disney Plus shows, from Rebels, from the High Republic. Do you, just looking at that cover, do you feel like a part of this from a marketing or welcoming into Star Wars perspective is, hey, if you're younger in particular, and you got hooked on Rebels, or you really like, you know, The Mandalorian, but you're not immersed, here's a book that will help you figure out what's going on.
I think you have to consider that in these quote modern times and stuff. Yeah, I think you do. And I love that. I would love to hear more about someone's relationship to, oh my gosh, I love those High Republic novels. Not that, hey, what's this other stuff? But like, yeah, I know there's other stuff. Clearly, you know, there's other stuff. But if this can pull you in and this can be that kind of resource to show it all to you, make it all important. I think it's very, I'm looking at the cover right now. You're right. It's very balanced across all eras and mediums of Star Wars. And I think you need to, because that's where we're at. There's so much Star Wars. That's the buffet. Joseph, this is the buffet menu.
I could just eat that cover up. One of the other things I'm really intrigued by is this description that from the time before the High Republic to blah, 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 what do you want out of knowledge about the time before the High Republic? Are you expecting any news to be broken in a book like this? Or do you feel like the little scraps that we have in modern canon about what exactly has been said about Jedi Sith conflict, Mandalorian wars, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Are you expecting to just find those breadcrumbs laid out?
I would love to, you know, announce the High Republic show, the Old Republic show that we all think that they for years have been making, right? Like, this is it, page one, coming this fall, Disney Plus. No, but you know, you take the Tar Vizsla stuff and you know, some of the Revans and the Banes and the Malguses and all these characters' names out there. You know, we haven't even talked about the cinematic trailer that was released last week for the Old Republic Legacy of the Sith stuff.
Yeah.
Co-written by our buddy Alex Backus and his writing partner, Josh Callahan, who's an old fantasy baseball buddy of mine. I knew him before I knew any of you, which is a weird life goes that way. You know, it focuses on Malgus and people love that stuff and are craving more of that in Star Wars modern canon. So maybe this is a chance to really kind of those breadcrumbs, put them down, and then maybe we'll pick them up a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. So I am very intrigued by what all they're going to cover there. My other question I wanted to ask you, Ken, is how do you feel about events being locked down to a date. Like, this has timeline, so it could just be like, and then further down the line, this happens, or it could get into, here's our new structure, right, for how we delineate time in Star Wars, whatever system they use, because there have been so many. But, like, right now, the Mandoverse has avoided being pinpointed, right? Like, it's just been in, I think, interviews and press releases. It's 5-7 It's kind of after the relatively recently after Return of the Jedi. Don't worry about it. And I sort of perceive a desire, at least from, and this is my opinion, from Favreau of like, let's not worry about that. Let's not pin it down too much. I would seem like this book might go like, yes, it has been 387 days since blah, blah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and even looking at the design, right, clearly it looks like those lines, those different colored lines are probably the timelines right there, right? I'm interested to see how they make that all work. I think it's a mix. I would love to know the exact moment of, you know, the day the Galactic Concordance was signed and the war truly ended, right? Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, I would love to know a little bit more of that. Some of it is there already, to be clear. But I do like erring on the side of giving it all space.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of a general year, but you know, looking at Mando, there's, I mean, even Book of Boba Fett, when they crossed over and they had the moments, you know, from season one, chapter five of Mando now play out in Book of Boba Fett from a different point of view. Even then the lighting, the moon, the sun, the stars seemed, people had questions. Well, when did that actually happen? We had a great question about how long did it happen? And I don't know if we'll get down to that nitty gritty, but it won't take the magic away from me if you know, Mando chapter one is, you know, 5 years, 14 days, 12 hours after the fall of, you know, the second Death Star explodes. It won't take the fun away from me, you know, I don't need it as much as I used to. Just want to know the general time.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I feel like a compulsion as a fan to want to know the dates, right? And know like, okay, exactly. So what else is going on with this other character while everything in Book of Boba Fett is happening, right?
Yeah.
But then also like, I also want to approach a book like this as this book in the real world is written by this great team of people, but in the imaginary world of Star Wars, is this the best timeline that historians could lay down? And there's still that energy of myth of like, well, this is what one historian believes, but maybe in future storytelling, we'll realize, oh, what we thought actually happened 5 years after Return of the Jedi actually happened 7 because storytelling demands it.
Yeah. Don't go into a movie theater with this book. You know, what are you doing? Are you having popcorn? No, I've got to pull this book out. I got to make sure I know. But again, I have fun. I like to know. I liked it because sometimes, in a good way, I mean this, it gets confusing, right? Well, okay, that Vader comic issue one, they did that. But Luke has Yoda's lightsaber. Okay, when did, you know, I love finding out those answers. And sometimes it does come in the form of specific dates. You also asked about like the timeline. You know, we grew up just being so used to Yavin, the Battle of Yavin being kind of this, you know, year zero. So it's either before or after. They've changed that and there's been new ways. I wouldn't mind if everything kind of has the new timeline, but
yeah,
I don't need that. You know,
yeah, that will be fascinating. I'm looking forward to this one.
It's gonna. Oh, this is right up my alley. You guys know I love those big coffee table research books. So I'll have to get another coffee table. That's clear. But I have until November because that is when this book is coming out from DK. All right. We've looked at the Star Wars news for now. We're going to take a quick break and get to your questions. But before we do that, we have an audiobook we'd like to recommend to you. Joseph, what do we have?
We have The Midnight Horizon by Daniel Jose Older. The next adventure in the High Republic book. The events in this book are probably marked down in Star Wars timelines, and we'll be able to read about that. But first, we're going to discuss this book, and you can listen to it on Audible if you'd like.
Yeah, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, let's take a break and then get to your questions here on ForceCenter.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? and some, well, less awesome. Like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. But the fleet, as we said up top, is growing. More ships have come on in here. So we are here to answer your questions. Joseph, you've pulled some wonderful questions from Twitter and Patreon. What do we get?
Yeah, we go first to our two questions from Twitter, and then we'll move on to Patreon. So first up is Bradley Tussing. Bradley says, I wanted to let you know how much your positive attitude really stands out and is appreciated in what can be a toxic environment at times. Thank you, Bradley. That's very kind. And Bradley heads into a question and says, if you can only get one, which would you rather see, Solo 2 in a theater or a Crimson Dawn series with a sporadic Alden Ehrenreich as Han? Sporadic Alden Ehrenreich sounds like this great action figure that you have of Alden Ehrenreich in different styles and poses. Do you collect sporadic Alden Ehrenreich? Great question. A torturous question having to choose. Where do you go, Ken?
Yeah, it's funny. Normally a question like this would, I'd be like, well, great, we don't have to choose. Well, no, this is a fun question, Bradley, because who knows? This could be something that a choice has been made. Maybe the choice has already been made. Follow me for hot scoops. I have none, by the way, folks. Solo 2 in a theater, Crimson Dawn series. I am going with Crimson Dawn series, Joseph.
Yes, I initially resisted choosing as well, but I want to play along with the wonderful spirit of Bradley's question. And also this one is a little bit more of a business marketing choice is definitely going to go into this one. I definitely want to see more of Han as Alden Ehrenreich as Han. And I would love to see Solo 2 in a theater. I wish that it had just crushed the box office, and we're already seeing a Solo 2. I think there would be, I don't think it's likely because of how Solo performed at the box office, which was quite well, but not as amazing as people want for a Star Wars film. But I think there might be a lot of resistance to that. And then also for me, just in terms of the story I want to see, I would love to see Han and Chewie go pick up exactly where we left off, right? And there, that first encounter where Han is awkwardly knocking on the door of the palace going, I heard about a gig. I want to see every second of that, you know, in whatever adventure they have. But I'm more compelled by the Crimson Dawn thing because it feels to me a little bit more new.
Yeah.
And I think be great as a series. I've been half serious, half joking about the title, but Crimson Dawn : Kira versus Maul. I've been talking about wanting that since Solo came out. I think it's one of the most compelling sort of cliffhangers of the Solo film of how does Kira thread this needle.
100%. And you know, the Kira back in the comics, the Crimson Rain comic is probably already an issue or two behind, but it's begun. Great stuff. And they were just proving there's a desire for more Kira content and more Crimson Dawn related content. I don't know if people are rooting for a criminal organization content, but again, it's what Kira does with it. The restructuring of Crimson Dawn, what she does during that time, what's the relationship to the Empire, especially then. And yeah, the main event to me is absolutely Maul versus Kira. Hear me out here. It's almost like we don't even need Han and Chewie. It's weird for me to even say that because I too want to see Suwadamo working again as Han and Chewie. So it's almost like when I think of Crimson Dawn and Kira and Maul, I don't think about Han and Chewie a lot. I think them going off and doing their adventures, and I almost don't want them to interact again. But I'll see. But yeah, I think. But that's not any slight on Han and Chewie of that era. It's just a testament to the potential storytelling around Crimson Dawn and Kira.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my honest answer is like, yeah, if there was any way possible, I would want both. But if I had to choose a lightsaber ignited in front of me, choose now, it would be the Crimson Dawn. I think partially because Emilia Clarke, I think her performance as Kira is great. I think Kira is such a unique and interesting character in general, but also in Star Wars, of somebody who has this perspective that you could call cynical, but when you look through her life experiences, you totally understand why she would have this perspective of everybody serves somebody. And hey, I managed to both keep my old friend Han from getting into more trouble than he realizes. And also I climbed up one rung of the ladder.
Yeah.
Now there's this being that I'm understandably terrified of. But if my life philosophy is everybody serves somebody, is there any way I can get rid of him so I don't have to serve him anymore? That's such a fascinating story to me of how her, and I know there's a stuff in the comics, I'm not entirely caught up on that, but I still think there's room before the comics for in specific taking off right from Solo. And how does she free herself on some level from Maul?
Yeah, I mean, this fantasy series we're writing here, like, begins with her taking a deep breath going, all right, now I have to go address everyone at the party. Dryden's dead. Eamon, can you come in here? You know, or Eamon's probably in a world of hurt too. But, you know, yeah, like, yeah, that pick it up right from there.
Yeah, no, Totra, I've got bad news from you about all your Hyloban friends. Yeah.
Can Lilo Primot come in here? I need a special song for him to sing.
Yeah, can you? You really need to sing really loudly while we get rid of this body. Yeah. Ejected in hyperspace. And I think, the Maul story is still unfolding. And this probably wouldn't be the story, but I still like the headcanon that Kira figured out a way to dump Maul on Malachor, and that's why he's stranded there in Rebels.
Well, yeah, and how and sharding his life and his whole thematic you know, storyline, thematic based storyline of, you know, pushing the rock up and the rock keeps falling down that Freddie Prinze Jr. talked about so on that viral clip a couple years ago. Like, what got him that point? Is he broken, defeated? Was it Kira directly at a feat of, you know, physical strength? Was it a mastermind thing? Or did what she started to do, did it, you know, break him down even more, you know? And I don't want to take it away from Kira's victory, you know what I mean? But just like, it's interesting to track not just the how, but the why of how did, what went wrong with you all?
Yeah, how did you end up there alone with with a cane waiting for some youngins to manipulate?
Yeah.
Love it. Any other thoughts on this one?
No, other than we need it. Let's do it.
Yeah, a lot of fun headcanon there for us. Thank you for the great question, Bradley. We're going to move on to a question from James. I'm going to take a run at pronouncing your last name, and I apologize if I get it incorrectly. Pasqualucci? Yeah. Again, apologies if I got that wrong. Here we go. Moving on to James' question. Hello there, Ken and Joseph. This is my first question, but before that, I just wanted to say thank you for everything you do as wonderful students of Star Wars. I've listened to you both for a while now, and your amazing insights and deep dives only continue to enhance my love of this modern era. That's very kind, very much appreciated. James says, on to my question. My favorite place in Star Wars is the Jedi Temple on Coruscant. Mm. I love it as the symbol of the Jedi that stood for so long before Palpatine claimed it as his own. Do you think we could see more storytelling from it in the future? I would love to see it post Episode 9. I would love to see Rey visit it. I would love to see the Jedi Order use it again in some way. Do you think there is a thematic or important storytelling possibility to my surface level ideas? What would you like to see? Thanks to you both. I don't think this is surface level at all. I think whenever the Jedi Temple pops up or the Imperial Palace in Palpatine's era, it is rich with meaning and storytelling possibility. So I would love this. Where do your thoughts go first, Ken?
Yeah, no, I love this indeed. And this, James, is a great thought here. And it is this wonderful symbol. I love when it shows up. I love when we get more storytelling. I love roaming around it in a video game. You know, it's all there. I do think it represents that, you know, cycle of change, clearly. And I also think a little bit of that Star Wars stuff, you and I love, Joseph, of taking old, combining it with the new, of just like it's old temple, new regime and an old temple, just back and forth. And I don't necessarily think I need the temple to be some sort of, you know, like go with me, like a Jerusalem with crusaders fighting for it over and over for generations. But that said, I like the idea of the Jedi going back there. I like the idea of them reclaiming it. And to James' point, specifically, the idea of kind of this Rey from nowhere, meaning, I don't mean, you know, that's now a controversial statement, but just like, you know, cast aside, out of the story, climbs the hills to get back into it, thinks Jedi are the myth. And then, you know, Octo was one thing, but to go to the temple, the beacon of the Jedi Order for so many generations, for her to go there, to find herself in that story, even if it's just a Netflix documentary of Rey walking around going, oh, and here's this, and here's this, like, give me a tour, I don't care. But just to see her in that environment and just the big scope of the Jedi Order. And again, she'll have some thoughts of maybe some of it didn't work. Maybe some of it wasn't needed. I got some book saying one thing and a person telling me the other, or life experiences, you know, there's big questions to have around it, but I think it'd be fun to see her interact with that. That said, I would love to see some Luke content. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the same thing after Episode 6. I mean, that would be a place of darkness, perhaps a trauma and a challenge to him, but also him trying to, he's clearly in a, I've got to rebuild the order, and building his old school is a little different than moving into the temple. I agree with that. I like the new school where it is, but just that's interesting to me too. Just Luke walking around the halls. What ghosts are there for him to discover?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest question about it moving forward is what ghosts are there? What does it mean to the characters? And what does it mean to the idea of rebuilding the Jedi? And I also think it's just totally tied into Coruscant, because we don't know a lot about Coruscant, right? Of like, there's the thought from the books that the New Republic wants to move the homeworld of the government around from time to time. They want to have something fresh and new instead of Coruscant. But that leaves this great big question open of like, is Coruscant still like a really central place in the galaxy? It is in the literal center. It's the whole planet's one big city. So millions, billions of beings live there. But what's the vibe now that it's not the center of power from either the Republic or the Jedi, you know?
Yeah, like, did New York City now become the second city? That's Chicago, man, not New York. Yeah, what do we
know? Is it the windy planet? Yeah. the general Coruscant conditions, that's mm-hmm. really fascinating that the Jedi Temple is tied to that. The Jedi Temple is just one of my favorite places. It's one of the reasons that in 2002, when other people had, you know, nothing but mean things to say about Attack of the Clones, it's like, I don't care. I saw a library.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Jedi Temple, you know, like, this descriptions in books of, you know, other rooms and places, and in the Clone Wars getting to see it more. It's fascinating to me. I'm such a Jedi fan, and that this is the Jedi's home, a sacred place, their secret base where they park their ships, their library. It's everything, right? And to have it be, and then it's in the middle of a bustling metropolis, which also gets, you know, examined in like Master and Apprentice. I think it's where Qui-Gon's thinking like, we should be out in the galaxy more. Maybe shouldn't be sitting just in this urban environment in the center of the galaxy, that we should mm-hmm. be seeing a lot more perspectives. And maybe it was a mistake to hole up there. It's so rich in storytelling ideas just by itself.
Oh, yeah. That idea of, you know, they're almost downright cosmopolitan, baby. Like they're in the center of it all. And I both like that and agree that, you know, it makes sense that I think you've seen in the High Republic so many Jedi out and about, right?
Yeah, and having a different perspective because, like, yeah, no, we are out where the problems are. You're talking about the problems in theory while going to, you know, fancy operas at night.
Heading down to Texas, yeah.
Heading down to Texas. I have a, I'm going to keep the speculation responsible for myself, where if it doesn't pan out, I will let it go. But one of the bits of concept art that they released in that Kenobi sizzle reel looks a little like Stormtroopers in the Jedi Temple, now Imperial Palace. So I do have a tiny bit of hope that we could see it fully as the Imperial Palace on screen in Obi-Wan Kenobi, because we've seen it in the comics a lot with all the Vader comics and, you know, various times where Palpatine is being mean to Darth Vader in the old Jedi Council chambers. And poor Vader has to be like, I remember the first time I walked in here and people were mean to me.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Look, I still... I love making this joke, but it should, Madonna's "This Used to Be Our Playground" should be playing as Kenobi goes down these hallways. It just works for me.
Yeah, so I would love to see that story on screen of the, you know, somebody who that place was sacred to, like Obi-Wan. Obviously, he had to go mm-hmm. through it when after the tragedy, but seeing just stormtroopers and Imperial business, you know. Mm-hmm. So that would be great. And then I totally agree with you, just with Luke and Rey. I think we'll get those stories someday. And they're so rich. I have to think it's high up on Luke's list. You know, in Shattered Empire, we get the great, like, okay, I have to go rescue this tree because I know it's in danger now. Like, mm-hmm. he's like, I love that he's, I'm Luke Skywalker, a Jedi Knight, and an artifact preservationist immediately, right?
Immediately, yeah.
And I think there's a great story to be told, and I can't remember if it's in anything, but like when one regime falls, it often, you know, burns the historical artifacts and the places on the way out, right? So did Mos Amita or some stormtroopers try to light that temple up on the way out? So I have to think that it would be a priority for Luke to go there. And just all the emotions for Luke to be like, okay, I kind of reconnected with my father, but now I can physically visit his room where he grew up, right? And this is the order that I'm tasked with restoring, but also the knowledge that it's been, you know, utterly violated by Palpatine. And does Luke go, I want to understand the true story, so I'm going to visit the ancient Sith temple underneath, you know?
Right. All the way to the core. And, you know, if I was Palpatine and his team, I'd just replay footage of, the younglings being destroyed as Vader's biggest victory. Now I know Vader's secret identity. You don't want to blow that. I know. Go with me here. But, you know, it'd be like, Luke's got to revisit all that there. There could be a spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's room, I think, for, depending on how these stories were told, there could be a great, you know, book or one-shot comic that's, the mirror visits of Luke and Rey, depending on the condition of the temple. But for Rey, it's got this great weight because it is her connecting with, the Jedi of the past, which is something she's clearly invested in. But it's also that was the seat of her grandfather's power as well. Yeah. So that's... I think meaningful for her, who has gone through this journey of, am I defined by you know, this blood and rejecting that and saying no. And it's interesting for her to have to visit the history. This was the Jedi Temple forever, but there's a Sith temple beneath it. You know, does that make her think of her journey on Octo? Or like, yeah, any place where there's great light, there's also going to be great darkness. And that's reality.
Yeah, love the idea of her exploring that. I just love, of course, in general, this is a question specifically about the Jedi Temple, but I always talk about those shots of Rogue One where it's just like, I love kind of seeing that big, this is a big prequel set. This is a big location in the prequels in modern Star Wars time, how it's shot. Even the flashback with Grogu and Book of Boba Fett, just seeing those hallways again. I'm really intrigued by that. And so, yeah, any kind of way, and there's a lot of, it's been discussed, a lot of real world reasons why maybe Coruscant wasn't in 7 or 8 or 9, and how it almost was in 9, the Battle of Coruscant, which was an idea I did like from that alleged lost script. A lot of the others I didn't. I would love to revisit Coruscant overall, and to not erase it from Star Wars at all, you know?
Yeah. So what, if you had to guess, what is the Jedi Temple after the Imperial Palace and the New Republic gets going? Is it a museum? Is it luxury condos? What do you think the Jedi Temple Imperial Palace is?
Too real. And a chain restaurant version of Dexter's Diner. He sold the chain. Some kind of a museum or honoring the Jedi would be interesting. Now, yes, you know, do the Jedi themselves fade into myth again? You know, Rey on Jakku kind of has, you get that feeling, but she's on Jakku. Another planet from the farthest from type of vibe over there. So I think in Coruscant, it would definitely be different, especially if there's any type of, you know, just going to that Luke Skywalker Delmico scene in Battlefront 2. Delmico was someone raised on Coruscant and fed the lies that the Jedi destroyed it all. And they're the bad guys. And Luke kind of pointed that out to him. Hey, maybe you feared the wrong thing growing up there. People in Coruscant would have an opinion of that. And it being open for business, the Jedi Order's being rebuilt and moving back in, maybe they would resist that, but maybe it's a place of learning, you know, hey, here's what was erased by Palpatine.
Yeah. I mean, there's fun real world implications of like, is it like, you know, visiting some site that has a complex history and is sacred and these to some people and not to others. And like, it's mostly controlled by like preservationists and government and historical societies. And here's this, you can visit this room and we'll tell you all the theories. Allegedly there's some other temple beneath it. And some people say Palpatine was this, and some people say the Jedi were this, but look around and decide and buy a t-shirt on the way out.
I walked the Jedi temple. Yeah. Yeah. Joking. And it is real world, but we just think of it in terms of story. That statue comes down at the end of Return of the Jedi. And what happens the next morning? What do they do with that palace? What do they do with that temple? It's very intriguing.
Yeah. So James, great question. As you can tell, we are extremely excited by it. There's so much great storytelling that I think is like the big kind of galactic story and the deeply personal to some of our individual characters' stories.
And Joseph, you got me really excited. I hadn't thought about that concept art from Kenobi and the possibility of him walking into the Jedi archives again or something. Oh man. I might really want that. I got to let go of that right now in case it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I could be totally off base, but we could also see it in Kenobi or in no big deal way because it's the Imperial Palace, right? It could just be like, that's where if we're following an Imperial, doing day-to-day business, they might be in the Jedi Temple.
Absolutely.
Such great stuff. All right, thank you very much. We're going to move on to our other questions. These come to us from patrons on Patreon. This comes from Steve Nort. Steve says, hey, Joseph and Ken, with the Book of Boba Fett fresh on everyone's minds and heavily a part of water cooler Zoom talks these days at the old job, I often hear hot takes that get me a little defensive. I can usually brush it off and engage only when asked my opinion directly, being the Star Wars guy and all, but it does get under my skin from time to time. The finale was fun, but what was even the point of the first couple episodes with the Tusken Raiders? They had nothing to do with the story. I'm introducing my kid to Star Wars, but I'm just going to skip over the sequel trilogy because it was bad and made no sense. You can easily skip The Phantom Menace and not miss anything important. Just an example to name a few. All great examples written by Steve that I have encountered as well, and I'm sure many listeners have. Steve concludes, was wondering how you guys handle Star Wars conversation in day-to-day discourse without losing your cool and well-actualing people. When do you feel it's okay to engage or offer clarity? And when is it better to just keep yourself on mute? Mm-hmm. Thanks. This is a really great question. And I think a really interesting thing to explore really from the perspective, from lots of different perspectives. But Ken, I think the place that my mind goes right away is you and I doing this podcast, almost anyone listening to this podcast are deeply engaged with Star Wars. So these mm-hmm. conversations are not necessarily casual to us, right?
No, yeah, and that phrase Steve used, that get me a little defensive, is the understatement of the century for me. But here's where I go. His question is about the day-to-day discourse, yeah. maybe the in-person stuff or, you know, people who know you. And I always say, and I've said before, and I'll say it again, Joseph is the Star Wars guy and his kind of friend group going back to his days in Minnesota or high school, college. I'm the Star Wars guy for old work. I still get texts from people. Hey, did you see this? And it's a Star Wars meme that's 7 years old. I just go, yeah, it's great. It's a Death Star fire pit. Yep. There's that kind of stuff. And I think all of us, I think if you come to if you're listening to a Star Wars podcast, you are probably the Star Wars person in your group. So going to that, I think I gauge what is the ability to engage or offer clarity and what is just, I need to smile because I'm not going to move them off their mountain and they're not pushing me off of mine. And we all need to move on. We all need to go enjoy lunch break without in peace. That's where I start, Joseph. That's where I start.
Yeah. No, I think for me, it's a challenge. There was one social event that I had last year that as I was preparing for it, I actually practiced. Like, I didn't set aside time, but like while I was brushing my teeth, I was like, this old friend of mine who I really like is probably going to say something like this to me. And how am I going to keep it friendly and, you know, not get defensive and not get angry, you know? So that's definitely where I start of I want to let me say it this way. I think Steve has a lot right just in his question, right? Of I can usually brush it off and engage only when asked my opinion directly, right?
Yeah.
So for me, there is that question of what is the context? And I so relate to what Steve is describing where it's like sometimes it comes up in the context where there's not room for discussion. It's like we're on the Zoom call for business and we're waiting for the last person to join the call and then someone casually says a perfectly valid day-to-day Star Wars opinion and there's not room for me to go that makes me viscerally angry and let me explain to you why, you know, like there's not it's not a discussion. Somebody said a statement and you just got to live with it, right?
Yeah, look, this opens up a lot of areas. And I'm trying not to approach this question, this great question from Steve, with current, you know, Star Wars discourse online, something I choose to not be a part of. That's not just about words muted. I just see, even if I see things, I'm like, that's just not where I need to put my energy. It's different. Even in podcasts, you know, we tweet out a podcast. To me, that's a billboard. If you want to yell at the billboard about our episode, that's fine too. Maybe I'll engage my mind. What pulls me out is and forces me to engage, even if I'm not asked, is where I, some of the stuff Steve talking about. You can easily skip the Phantom Menace, not miss anything important. That's wrong to the Star Wars story. But I have to make sure if I'm focused and I'm finding the light side, I have to remember, first of all, go with me. None of this matters. Meaning we're talking about a very important space franchise, but it's also a silly space. You know, there's bigger things in the world to plug into. But I get rolling up the sleeves. But also, you know, I just think you got to leave some room, right, for everyone to maybe take their own journey to it, and for us to have our own. And I think some of the stuff that you and I discussed here, and Jennifer again soon, and in the past, you know, it's I don't know. I always say we're not saying anything too deep. It's right there. I feel like I'm Leo DiCaprio on that meme pointing at the screen. It's right there. We're talking about a theme that's right there. The theme, the point, the communication is right there. And yes, things are up to interpretation. And I think you need to leave room. But there's sometimes just like, no. The Jedi at their heart are good. Things they've done might have been wrong, but that's in there. That's good. That's the story's there. Yeah. And then when I think people seem to speak for creators as if they know them. is what pulls me out of it and knocks me off. But again, if I'm doing this right, I need to leave everyone, including myself, to have room on the journey to change or grow and push forward or go, no, that version wasn't for me. You know what I mean? Just and then that helps calm anything down and removes my defensiveness.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I try to think about where the other person is coming from, right? And they probably don't know. They might know I have a Star Wars podcast, but they probably don't understand how much that means to me, right? That yes. I get like a ton of joy and just spend a lot of my waking time studying, analyzing, thinking, discussing. So for them, it's like, Star Wars is popular. I saw the new one.
Yeah.
Here's my strong opinion about it. And they don't realize that for me, it's just like you saw a picture of my dog and said my dog was ugly and then walked away like, hey, that actually like, that's something that means a lot to me. And that's not really cool that you just said like, hey, we're beginning our Zoom meeting. Your dog looks dumb and probably urinates on the carpet. Anyway, like they don't understand that that's the way it feels to me because they don't understand my perspective.
Yeah. And this is a fun conversation because it's even something I'm working through. It's since 2017, it's been a lot tougher to talk about Star Wars online. And again, none of this matters. There's more important things in life to worry about than even as I say, it's been tough to talk Star Wars online. Okay. You know, go touch some grass as they keep saying on the internet. I keep saying this, seeing that every week. Touch some grass. I do touch some grass. But I think it is a little bit of that too. You're right. Of like, I told the story before here, but it's applicable to this conversation. Like I was getting a ride from like a Lyft driver and he looks over and he sees my two pins, my enamel pins from my buddies at Black Series Rebels. It was Han and Leia. And he's like, is that Star Wars? Yeah. And I just in my head was like, wait for it. He's like, you like Star Wars? Yeah. You don't like those new ones though, right? And it's like, what am I going to do? I'm in this car for the next 25 minutes going to the comedy store. I want this guy to get me there safe and I'm not going to get into the debate. And I, you know, and that's what I just got to like, that's a you go your way, you go mine. And then I'll even be like, oh, I do love it. I didn't deny it. I do love it. Oh, I don't like it. It's this, it's that. Everything he's saying is 100% fact in his mind. You know, and I just go, okay, cool, man. That's kind of where it ends sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way in terms of like wanting to handle the conversation so it doesn't become horrifically unpleasant for either person. Mm-hmm. I think for me, you're touching on another thing, two ideas that are really important to me. And one is saying our opinions as facts. Mm-hmm. I understand that particularly in like critical analysis and writing, that's the way we communicate in culture We say our opinions as facts. But that's always like any sort of critical setting. That's with the kind of cultural agreement that I've read the text. I'm responding to the text. I have made an argument. Now I'm providing evidence. Right. But that sort of critical approach to we speak in facts because it's a stronger way write critical analysis has seeped into real life, where so many of us say our opinions as facts. And I don't know if that will ever change. I really wish that would change because I think it doesn't bother me at all for have somebody say, I really did not enjoy The Last Jedi. Because then I'm actually curious to go, oh, I did, but I'm interested in your opinion. Why didn't it work from you? So I feel like stating opinions, even when I disagree with them, opens the door to a conversation and understanding. And I might not agree, but I might learn something about this other human being, about what they like in Star Wars or movies or what was going on in their life in 2017. And it becomes something that we can exchange. But for me, it slams the door when everything is a statement of fact. And I think that's what makes people defensive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sullies the ability to have more substantive conversations is when you just start with the Book of Boba Fett is crap. You are automatically on defensive, right? Because you're trying to disprove a fact. And this is a real difficult, slippery conversation because there's some amount of we speak in facts, even when they're opinions, and that's probably not going to change. But I still want it to because I want us to have better conversations where we can learn and understand and not immediately go on the defensive just because we disagree about a space movie.
Yeah. And that's something I have to start at home with that, right? Where there's little tiny things along the way that if someone comments or tweets, sometimes on the rare occasion I respond, it's like, I just can't let that lie. I just can't let what you're saying lie, and I'm going to let you know about it. But I have to work past that, and so it's always about what we work. You know, we lead with joy here because at Force Center, because otherwise, why am I going to waste my time?
Right.
This is why I'm on a Star Wars podcast, and I left the general movie podcast world because I just don't enjoy movies like I enjoy Star Wars. It's a different game for me, so I wasn't going to sit around there. And I what I think I when sometimes the defensiveness pops up for me, and going back to Steve's question, is it can be around a family dinner or a lunch with friends. It's not about Twitter or podcast wars or the battle to be more gooder over what your Star Wars takes are. I hate when my simple joy, and it's simple, my simple joy is often confused with putting my head in the Star Wars sand.
Mm.
And that's where I'm like, you're very wrong about that. You haven't had conversations with me. But I lead with joy because otherwise, why am I here?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think that is another part of it. We get defensive because like in my mind, I'm totally fine with other people having different opinions. And it honestly wouldn't bother me at all to see somebody go, oh, I didn't like that. But when I see a bunch of takes saying it was awful, these people behind the scenes for sure did this awful thing that is not verified, you know, that feels more like it's telling me like it's robbing my joy of just like, I was happy and excited about this. Now I see 8 statements of fact that the thing that I liked was actually, you know, horrific.
That
statement of fact that and for me, you and I have discussed it a lot lately of it's utterly valid to discuss the behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. But I prefer just analyzing the text because I think that we get obsessed with things we've heard about the behind the scenes. Like, honestly, a lot of the Book of Boba Fett takes that that challenged me were because people were making assumptions about why it was done. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about engaging with the text. It was, I am assuming that it is a fact that Disney told the creators to put Grogu in it. And like, maybe that's true. I don't know. We don't know. I'd rather engage with the text because we don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird, you know, I think we're just seeing in the human mind how it works and how it's always worked, but it's on display. I don't play Wordle, but there was a thread going around I saw this morning. Did you see this about the conspiracy theories about the New York Times and Wordle? Did you see this?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've been playing Wordle and I was,
And
I don't think it's got more difficult, but that was the opinion that spread on wildfire that it is absolutely for sure gotten more difficult.
And the fact is it's gotten less difficult because they removed difficult words and that's nothing new. None of it is new. And we're dealing with it on large scales here. And all that, it gets overwhelming. And Steve, your question is, I think we've gone beyond maybe just the question, but one of my final thoughts on this, Joseph, is too, is as the Star Wars person, guy, whatever in your community, it really bothers me when someone seeks me out. Hey, Star Wars person, what'd you think about this? And I go, oh, God, I loved it. And they go, Anyways, it sucked. And I'm like,
why did you ask me for my opinion?
Yeah. And know your audience. Sometimes I've been asked believe it or not, some of my friends are big Star Wars fans, not on Twitter. Don't know. Hey, man, the Book of Boba Fett series is over. I'm gonna binge it. Should I binge it? And I need to either, based on who that person is, go, yes, it is a important self-help manual of a Star Wars show that's about all these XY fill in the themes from weeks of Star Wars discussions. Or I go, yeah, Boba Fett rides a Rancor. And both are valid.
You're a good friend to know what your friends like, what they'll be engaged by.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Final thing for me is I just want to make, since we went off to some tangents, an effort to
answer Steve's
actual question.
Yeah,
it's a tough time. And I think we're, you know, I think all of this is legitimate to investigate. Why do we get defensive? You know, what can we do about that? Because it is ultimately, we can only control ourselves and it's our responsibility to, you know, handle whatever comes at us. So I did want to share, because I have been in this position a couple times now in extremely different contexts, everything from business Zoom calls to friendly Zoom calls that have nothing to do with this, but no one wants them to explode into a large Star Wars fight. I've had this happen in Hollywood meetings where I'm trying to pitch something and like, I can't, you know, So here's what's actually worked for me to directly answer Steve's question is I want to remember that Star Wars is for everyone and that a lot of times people don't have the point of view that I have of spending this much time thinking about it. So I yeah. want to, like Steve is saying, don't want to go into, well, actually.
yeah.
So I always try to acknowledge the other person's perspective. It's because I had a lot of people, particularly in the heat of the sequels, that say, you know, well, I didn't like this in some way or it's bad in some way. So I'll always try to start by acknowledging and saying either something like, yeah, it's not for everyone, or I've certainly got my criticisms too. So I acknowledge their perspective. And then I really try to segue into I or my opinion statements and say something like, oh yeah, no, I've got some criticism of the sequel trilogy, but I really like them. They hold together really well for me and I really enjoy them, and see if that's it. Or if the person's like, asks like, yeah, well, in what way, how? And then I'll, you know, try to throw something out. And oftentimes it's not a longer conversation, and that just diffuses it. And they're just like, okay, well, yeah. I was hoping to vent about how dumb it was, but this guy isn't going to do it. The other thing that I wanted to be sure to bring up, because it's for me, it is a tribute to our listeners. I often bring up the great perspectives that I've learned from doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. Like I've had a specific moment like this where there was just that kind of a drive by, you know, assassination of the prequels in a context that where it just like, this can't become an argument, you know?
Yeah.
So I tried to do the same thing of acknowledge like, yep, I agree that there's some rocky moments and some, you know, stiff dialogue or acting moments, but you know, I do this podcast and I get to hear how much people who grew up with those movies, a lot of them really love this. And I've heard personal stories about Attack of the Clones getting people through a hard time, or I've heard from people who identified with Anakin. I've heard from women who their mind was blown that they got to see a 14-year-old, you know, leader tell those middle-aged men what to do. And those middle-aged men just did it. That means a lot to people. And that has often diffused it. To offer the lived experience that I've had the opportunity to hear from our listeners, it slides the conversation away from, you know, bashing to the conversation then often segues into generational change or a surprising take that they heard from somebody about other pop culture. And it just diffuses the it's good, it's bad fight.
Yeah. Yeah, no, look, and media criticism has become just more and more surface level, I think. It's become scrambling for moral high grounds at time. We live in a sins of the movie era, ding, and that's kind of that. Even that's become just a tired conversation for me. I don't care about all that. I care about exactly the stuff you talk about and what this all means to me. If you want to have that conversation over Zoom with me, we'll have it.
Yeah. And I think your answer pretty early on was the ultimate answer for me, is just pick your favorite Jedi and try to be like them, you know. Yeah. not Anakin when he's angry, but for me, you know, it's Obi-Wan. Just let it go. You can't control them. No one can take your opinion from you. You know, there is a strength in that, right? Of like, sometimes I almost imagine a really difficult Star Wars encounter like that. It's Maul and Kenobi in the desert of like, I understand you're angry, but it's just not going to faze me.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a strength there. So great question. Thank you for letting us go on a bit there, Steve. Hope we answered your question as well as questions in our own minds. Any more thoughts before we move on to our final question, Ken?
No. I'll fail and succeed with this challenge all week long.
Yep. Yep, I have failed in moments as well, and try to have more victories than failures. What else can you do? Yep. Move on to our final question from PQ. PQ says, hi, Joseph and Ken. What is the coolest Star Wars find in the most unlikely place you've ever stumbled across? Let me give you an example. A couple of years ago, I found pristine hardcover copies of the first two books of the 90s Zahn trilogy at a gas station Little Free Library. I had lost my original copies, purchased at a B. Dalton the moment they came out. and I was overjoyed. Thank you both for what you do. The compassion and kindness you bring to Force Center has influenced my fandom and my daily life. That is very, very kind. I really did not pick all of the questions that were complimentary. Just happened to be a lot of nice compliments. So thank you all. Ken, what's your answer to this question? Where have you discovered a Star Wars find somewhere you were not expecting to?
Man, here's the problem. The answer, I don't think it counts. But it started, it opened up the world of possibilities to what PQ is asking. Mine is, and I know 100% I've told the story before, but it's finding the New Hope novelization at a used bookstore. Now, that shouldn't count. Yeah. Finding a book at a used bookstore? What are you talking about? But I was still very young. Mom took me to the Nan's Pre-Owned Books, which is still there in Grover Beach, California, a different location, but took me there. Hey, I'm going to get some books. You look around. I pulled out Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, and it was like, Star Wars is here? It's out here. I watched those movies on tape with the commercials, but they're here. And it was like, I didn't go to the toy store to get something when like I had already been doing with Kenner. Right. It was like, this is a very adult, you know, adults are here to get books. Like what is this? This is, and Star Wars is here for me. And it was such a surprise that one day, and those are the copies I still have. I'm staring at right now. A little bit later on, I found Jedi. And I've told the story of I needed to go back to the used bookstores to look for the Journal of the Wills, which is a book that clearly was out there that Lucas mentioned in the prologue here. But that meant what PQ is talking about. I don't know if I've really experienced that elsewhere. Go to a garage sale and find Attack of the Clones toy or something like that. You know, but every time I go, I'm always looking for Star Wars to, I think, kind of relive that moment of utter surprise that there's Star Wars in a place I didn't expect it as a kid. So even though I don't have a specific answer for PQ beyond that one in my life, because also I'm pretty much intentionally seeking out Star Wars when I go to stores and now, but just to turn the corner, pull a book and be like, oh my God, Star Wars is here too. I haven't experienced that, but I want to every time.
Yeah, that's really, really great. And it counts because you encountered Star Wars, a place that you did not expect to, that you didn't know it lived, right?
Right.
You didn't know that was a possibility. And then you had that spark when you went to a bookstore of there's a possibility there'll be some Star Wars here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I've definitely encountered it, not things to buy, but in places I didn't expect to. There's a nice little cocktail place relatively near to where we live called Lost Property. And it has this great theme of there's just like luggage everywhere. And it's kind of like, it's very elegant and old school. And then there was just like, I think like a sippy cup of Boss Nass. Like that's one of the things that's been lost on the road. So I love it when I discover even in like decor, Star Wars somewhere, but for myself, going back to childhood as well. I knew when there were times where I could buy an action figure and my parents would be a part of a trip or they'd take me on a special trip because I could buy an action figure this week. And that thrill. There was one time I went to my dad. I was with my dad. I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I don't know why I went with him, but like he just needed a hammer.
Mm.
And somebody had picked up the action figure of Greedo and just put him down with the hammers. And I remember just the utter shock and joy of Greedo in the hammer section. And that's the Greedo I bought. That's the Greedo I have. Because I think it was like, Dad's like, we came here for hammers, but but here's Greedo. And this is around the same time that, you know, my dad had told me that sometimes when you get shot, you just get nicked.
Right.
And I was like, what's nicked? I'm like, oh, it just buzzed in the arm. And like, so I had decided Greedo just got nicked. In the gut. It's fine. Ever since then, I've had that like literally since I was a kid, is like, you never know. Sometimes they wander through the store. You could find a Star Wars action figure in any section. You never know. Maybe it's in the underwear. Maybe it's with the toasters. You never know.
Yeah. What you made me think of another one, though. Recently, in December, I did the comedy in Washington, D.C. at the Comedy Loft with Mark Ellison. The first night I put an Instagram photo up, I walked in. And it had been there before, but I forgot. We'd been there a year ago. But they had a full-size Yoda on display, and I took a picture of it, and that was one of those, like, you know, you don't in a comedy club, you don't expect to find Star Wars, even though nerd comedy and Star Wars jokes go over a little bit better than they used to, that I'll say. You wouldn't expect that, and that made me feel like, oh, Star Wars is here, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah, yeah, it is great when Yoda and Boss Nass turn up in surprising places. That's a great question, PQ. I'm sure we'll think of even more of wonderful Star Wars and unlikely places we've discovered. But for now, that's the questions, Ken.
That is the questions, and here's where you can find us if you want to say nice things or just yell at us. Guess what? It's all open for you to choose what to do with your time. On Twitter, we are at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. As I mentioned, subscribe there. Pretty soon, some live Q&As will happen on there. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and many more spots. Just search. You'll find us. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center, and you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Always loving having new patrons join us. Get into our Discord to discuss Star Wars in a fun way every day. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. And once again, featuring stbaldrick.org, great organization that does all they can to raise money and awareness to help cure childhood cancers. The research, all the stuff in it. And the reason I'm highlighting this and have been for the last few weeks is on March 5th, my friend Jeff Saunders, a great guy, is part of the St. Baldrick's Shave event, where a bunch of people shave their hair to help raise these funds and awareness. And you can support by going to stbaldrick.org/participants/Jeff Saunders 2022 if you want to support him directly or anyone on the team. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can see some videos of my Razor Crest birthing. probably a better way to advertise that. It's pictures of the box. It's safe. It's totally safe. So find me there. You can find more of the stuff I've done over the years and will be doing in the future on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. And I want to continue to highlight the great organization Illuminative. Here's what the group has to say. Created and led by Native peoples, Illuminative is a new nonprofit initiative designed to increase the visibility of and challenge the negative narrative about Native nations and peoples in American society. If you want to learn more about all their great projects, you can go to illuminatives.org.
Wonderful choice, as always. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting. And thank you all at times for disagreeing or offering different perspectives, but approaching it in a nice way. That is definitely what we're here for as well. We are just here at the center of the Star Wars galaxy, celebrating this crazy, wild, poignant franchise that we all love. Thanks for listening. This has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.